Okay, well, hello everybody, and welcome to Open Access Week. Today we are continuing our sessions on open access issues and opportunities with a presentation from Patrick McAndrew from the Open University. But before I introduce Patrick, I'd like to take a moment to remind everyone of the sessions taking place this week. Yesterday, if you missed it, we had a very stimulating presentation from Terry Anderson and on the Open Access Scholar. And if you weren't able to make it, that has been recorded and archived on AU Space, which is Athabasca University's own open access repository. So feel free to go to the link I'm about to provide and take a, you can even listen to it on MP3, I believe it's there. So one moment. Sorry, I'll send that out to the room. There we go. There's the link. And all of the future, well, today's presentation and all future presentations will also be recorded and archived at that site. It will be under archived sessions in the bottom left corner. Okay? During the presentation today, there is going to be opportunities for questions and comments, so we invite you at that time to use the microphone and illuminate by clicking on the microphone icon in the bottom left corner of the screen. And please remember to click on it again when you're done speaking in order to free it up for someone else. You can also let us know that you're waiting to speak by clicking on the hands up icon in the bottom left corner of the participant box. That's the hand with the little green arrow. And that will sound a bell to let us know that you're waiting to speak. If you don't have audio capabilities, you can also text questions and comments in the text box, and we're going to try and stay on top of those. And finally, at the end of the session, we're going to be doing a draw for an open access t-shirt. So don't exit the room too quickly there at the end. Now I'd like to introduce our presenter today, Patrick McAndrew. Patrick is Associate Director of Learning and Teaching in the Open University's Institute of Educational Technology. He's led a range of research projects addressing how materials and environments can support learning through the use of learning design and the provision of tools for learners. Patrick has a degree in mathematics from the University of Oxford and a PhD in computer science from Harriet Wyatt University in Edinburgh. He's currently leading OLNet, a collaborative initiative to research the use of open content for free education. OLNet is supported by the William and Flora Hewlett Foundation, and today he's going to be filling us in some more on that. So I'll turn over the mic to you, Patrick, and let you get underway.
Thank you very much, Lynn. I just need to get back to the beginning. There we are. Yes, I'm going to talk about open access research opportunities and strategies. This really sort of overlaps with the world of open educational resources. And in particular, we've now got this project, OLNet or OLNet, the Open Learning Network, where we've been funded by the Hewlett Foundation, together with Carnegie Mellon University in the US, to look at the issues that have come up around open educational resources. Essentially, it's the challenge of researching openness. The Hewlett Foundation has invested more than $100 million over the last 8+ years in the open educational resource world. And they're sort of worried a bit about what is the impact, what's the evidence for the change that this brings, the benefits it offers, and also then what are the best ways to take this forward. Because we're finding that open educational resources offer us all sorts of new models for working. We need to understand these, we need to investigate them, we need to pay attention to them. So, just sort of set a bit of background as well. We found that tools like Illuminate have helped us do some of this research, And I realize that you can't direct your attention in too many directions, but we've been using a tool called CloudWorks alongside the AllNet.org site as a place for us to run virtual events that have sort of a persistence to it. And so I've also set up a place there to gather together the issues around open access research opportunities and strategies. And I'll paste into there sort of the comments that we collect today and open it up for other people to comment on further. So Lynn's giving you the CloudWorks URL. I think she'll probably put up the one for this specific page as well. Or you can just search for Athabasca and choose from the pages that mention that, which is the smallest number to cope with. What we're finding is that it's really important to take an approach where we see everybody involved in the world of open education resources as research collaborators. We did this deliberately in our own project where we were developing open education resources, but asking people to reflect, share, and tag. The tag for Open Access Week itself is #OA Week. The tag we've developed for AllNet is #AllNet. So if you're twittering away in the background while also commenting in Illuminate, while also writing comments into CloudWorks, any of you tag with this, we'll track it down. As part of being a researcher in this open world is trying to apply the tools that we have. And we're all very busy people as well, so taking that pause to reflect and share is a vital part of our work. Just a bit of background, I suppose. It's sort of where are we coming from? Well, I work at the Open University. This actually shows a couple of pictures from when we held our 40th anniversary Open Day, which was titled Open Unlimited. And maybe that picture is best used as evidence that it does reach 25 degrees centigrade sometimes in the UK as well. So we are the Open University. We've had a mission all along to be open to people, open to methods, open us to ideas. But actually, openness has changed. What it means to be open has changed. There was a very interesting comment to a colleague of mine who went across to an event in the States, and they said, Open University, wow, that's a great name. You must be a startup. You must be something new in this open world. And actually, you've been around 40 years, but it has changed the impact of what people expect from an open university. And my own part of it, the Institute of Educational Technology, say now sites into this new building. We've got labs on the ground floor and various open areas that encourage us to work together. We're very interested in research issues around this. So IET was established 40 years ago along with the university. One of the first things the university set up was somewhere where we would research how to teach at a distance, how to be the open university. And we're still doing that. Okay, so Project AllNet, in working with our colleagues at Carnegie Mellon University, we got through an approach of trying to study our own experiences, but also the experiences of everybody else in this open education resource world. It's worth sort of reflecting on where we came to from this, from working on a big project for us called Open Learn. So Open Learn has been running now for, I'm just realizing actually, it's going to have its third anniversary on the 26th of October. And so this is providing content that comes mostly from the Open University, freely available, clearly licensed with a Creative Commons license to show that people can do whatever they want with the content. I said mostly from the Open University because also we've got what we call the lab space where people can come in and provide content or change our content as well. and that's had quite an impact on the sort of connections we've been able to build, and I'll say a bit more about that. I just grabbed a few stats from the analytics running on it, and we've had 8 million distinct visitors since we launched 3 years ago. And this shows actually a picture of the last 6 months with nearly 2 million people visiting the site. And the thing about that has changed for us by being involved in this open world is our audience is now very global. We still have a UK dominance. That little pie chart there is showing the number of people who come from the UK. The green segment, the second largest there, is people from the US. The orange one is Canada. In a typical month, we'll have about 500,000 visitors, and maybe 20,000 of those will be Canadians, or at least coming from a Canadian IP address. But what's also been really interesting is that big gray segment there, which are people from other places. And we do get people from all sorts of places. If you look through our stats, we got people from the Vatican City, from countries we don't even know exist. And it really is sort of a window to the world and a place where it's very difficult then to research all of those various experiences. We can't ask every individual to fill in a questionnaire for us. Our partners at Carnegie Mellon University have also been involved in this open world with the Open Learning Initiative, and they took a very research-based approach, and I think this is really why Hewlett sort of joined us together as in our new project, because we both sort of saw the challenge of trying to understand what's going on. We saw Open Learning as an experiment. They see Open Learning Initiative as a way to get data about what people do. Last one about us as partners, and we're certainly not the only people involved in this. The Open Courseware Consortium has members from all over the country. And this is sort of, this picture sort of shows a quick breakdown by different countries as they're classified as on the Open Courseware Consortium site. So I label a few segments there. You'll see that perhaps surprisingly, it's in terms of membership, in terms of the number of organizations taking place, it's Spain that is the biggest, and second is the affiliates. These are people who actually don't really have a country location. And then the US comes in, UK is down, shown mark there, and Canada, which is Athabasca University, and I think one other, I ought to check beforehand, but I think it's just a couple of Canadian universities that are part of the Open Courseware Consortium. Of course, don't join to join in because it is a very open approach. And the OER world is getting more organized. So this is OER Commons, where we've got a route in to the content so people can now start to find things. Okay, I'm just going to change tack a bit and sort of talk about sort of the issues that come up, and just sort of quickly take you through what I call some of the traps of trying to work in, I suppose, projects like this. I'm going to say open educational resource world, but it's as much the style of projects where you're trying to introduce learning technology. The web that we're trying to spin is also a trap for us as well. So one of these things is the legacy trap, that we might be doing new things, but we're still working with the same old dinosaur of education systems, and it's how much some of the open impact is actually going to tear us all apart and cause an evolutionary step change. Are we actually involved in working on the end of the university, or are we trying to evolve and keep the university going? And whichever of those is true, it still means we need to work on this. We need to work on the future that's offered by openness and the way we can see it changing as people use different tools all around. And there's the search trap. Now, in this sense, I suppose what I'm saying is that a lot of the projects a lot of work happens where people are trying to do search better than Google. If you're trying to be better than the leaders in this field, then you're probably doing the wrong thing, and you need to work alongside the facilities that everybody is using. And along with that goes what I call the metadata trap, which is if only everything was really well described, then it would be great and we could do all sorts of things with it. So metadata is the descriptive data that goes along with the objects that you're producing. And if this rather made up graph is, if you can feel like this, that you're spending more time producing the description of the materials than you are actually sharing it and making it available to the world. The build it and they will come trap. I spent the main part of today actually in London at a meeting of the JISC-funded UK OER projects. And those projects are all trying to avoid this particular trap. They're trying to pay attention to how people will use and share. But nonetheless, we, and I'm including myself in this, come along as producers. We can see it as sort of putting our wares available to the world, and people will come along. And while it's very evident from OpenLearn that you do get the visitors, unless you sort of think about the user experience, what users will get out of this, then I don't think that everybody gets all the benefits that are possible. The system is everything trap, and this is a genuine system diagram from OpenLearn, and it's a very good one actually if you interpret it, but you sort of get involved in the production of a computer system, how things work together, rather than, again, sort of looking at things from a user perspective and taking advantage of all the opportunities that are out there. For one-stop shop trap, I've described us as a research project. We've got a website. We love it when people comment on things that we're doing. But actually, we shouldn't imagine it is the one place where people will come. We need to be operating on the environments that people operate, both as learners and as fellow researchers. And the perfectionist trap. So these were and also an example of reuse in my case, because these are Lego models that my son built a few years ago. And on the left are some rather wonderful, very carefully designed Lego airplanes. On the right are my son's own design, and the question is sort of which is more fun, which is, it comes down to what's more suitable for purpose. But certainly if you just put all your effort into perfecting things, particularly when somebody's actually going to come along and break it back up into Lego bricks and build something different, you can be spending a lot of time being a perfectionist. And step forward for OpenLearn was when we adopted a sort of beta position, that we would release material before the final check. We deleted a sort of proofreading check that we had in there, which we could see was holding everything up. And forgetting the past, looking back, this is one example of the past, but there's many others. Indie schooling society, Ivan Illich, considered what would be possible if only there was a yellow pages of all the resources that are out there in the world. And at that stage, he literally meant a yellow pages, a directory you could flick through. Well, now we've got in electronic form something beyond what he could imagine in terms of his thinking about the impact and how it might change society. There's very interesting things to be found by looking back in the past. And the Holy Grail, that you set yourself up to search for something that you can never find, you can never achieve. This often actually equates to the wish that for reuse and repurposing, that if you put material out there and somebody's going to come along and make it better and give it back and refine it, and gradually you'll end up with the perfect computer science course, the perfect materials course. through this process of sharing. I think there are examples of that happening, but if you set yourself up with that as your target, then you're probably going to fall down. And the brick wall trap, and I actually showed this slide at a previous event, and I was told what it is that should be written on the brick wall. Nothing will make me join in. So no matter what you do to lower barriers, no matter what you offer people, actually, this isn't a world you'll get everybody joining in. And you can spend a long time hitting your head against that brick wall as well. So I've got this slide here for two purposes. One is, if you get caught in those traps, your work can disappear down a black hole. And so this seemed a perfect representation of this. But also, it's arranged me to pause, because I know that if I keep going, I can get into a swing, and it would be much better if I could check whether there's any questions, whether people themselves recognize any of these as key things that are perhaps happening around them, holding them up. So I'm going to go off the mic for a bit, and please do feel free to grab it.
Well, Patrick, it's Terry. I can identify with all of those traps. I think the one that I commented in the text is just the legacy issue. And it's a challenge because the legacy issue is worse the more successful you were in the past. And I think there's a sense that, you know, if you've been struggling, and I often think of the story from IBM where they needed about 4 or 5 years of drastic losses and red ink on the books before they really changed their whole way of operation. And unfortunately, many educational institutions seem to be able to coast along at a much below par on what they could do because they have a model that did work in the past and works sort of okay in the now, and without too much thought of is it really going to work into the future.
Yes, I think you're right, and Lynn's also put up sort of, this can all sound a bit like the auto industry, and is the university sector an industry that's in some sort of decline, in which case are we working on the disruptive technologies that can actually offer a sort of chance for a rebirth or at least a new way of working. The university sector's model has been really very, very resilient against the introduction of various technologies. And whether what's happening now with the openness of information, certainly I heard it, another one of these arbitrary statistics, after all, 84% of statistics are made up, half of what you learn in university is already sort of obsolete by the time you're leaving. That so knowledge isn't everything. I'm sure everybody in this room regularly looks up things on Google, as I mentioned. Maybe you're off Googling aspects, as I was saying, sort of looking up Ivan Illich, for example. You don't really need to know what the key points are of his research. It's very readily available to you by looking. And does this change then the dynamics of our education as an industry? Do we need to change, does the degree that you're giving, the accreditation, which everybody says is the thing that we give that nobody else can give, does that change in value? I'll open up the mic again for any comeback on that or anything else.
Hi, it's Lynn. I couldn't help thinking while you're talking about this, and also when you were talking about the perfectionist issues, that the focus in education seems to be moving more from the product to the process. Like you were talking about looking up things in Google, and I see my own children going through this as they're learning to not so much create a product at school, but using the technologies and using what's available and learning how to use that to find what they need. And the same goes for this open access model that you're talking about, if we can get away from feeling like we have to create the perfect product and just put out there what we're working on and learn through the process, then I think we're taking that step, those baby steps in the right direction.
Yes, thanks, Lynn. I think that, that it does feel the right thing to be doing, and I think that sort of being brave enough to share at a stage where your work can still make an impact is something that I personally still find a bit difficult to do, to be honest. It's sort of the honing that you do of work so you can put forward all the arguments and back them up that we're trained to do as researchers versus actually just getting an idea out there and having it discussed. And in CloudWorks, we're trying to move along to that sort of more dynamic area. And sort of, I think that Terry made a good suggestion about the Open Scholar, and the terminology we use locally is digital scholarship, sort of learning to take advantage of these tools. I'm going to move on, and sort of I felt I might have depressed people, so I thought I'd sort of point out that we have reasons to be cheerful as well. I've got to say that this particular slide, I lifted a wine glass up from beside the sink, and there was this smiley face. So it's obviously a message in there somewhere. I think the reason to be cheerful is about openness, the impact that openness can have, the way it can help solve a lot of practical problems. Just the sharing of materials. We had a project, an ongoing project called TESA, working with sub-Saharan Africa. And the mechanisms of trying to transfer our material from here to particular sites in Africa was really tricky. And it was far simpler to say, everybody put everything in the open, everybody put everything available for free, and then they can pick it up as well as the rest of the world, and the rest of the world can then start to spot new benefits. So openness can change the way you work. And then sort of what we need to do then is sort of weigh up the evidence, sort of gather these things that work and ask why all the time. Why are we trying to do these things? And if we sort of step back from some of the hows and what's that we tend to be concentrating on, sort of think about what are we trying to do, is what can we achieve by addressing these issues, how can we move things forward. And this brings me back to the OnLab project and sort of the model that we're trying to develop behind this. A colleague of mine, Simon Buckingham, came up with the analogy. So these are a couple of pages from UK Cancer Research. And if we think about what has happened in a world like that, where they've got a big problem to solve, and the main thing from the point of view of an agency like UK Cancer Research is to get everybody focusing on the right sort of issues. So that's what we're trying to do in OnLab. We're developing an approach about getting people to pay attention to what open education resources and that world can achieve. So, again, sort of Simon's terminology is a collective intelligence approach, trying to, again, more people, sort of in populist terms, I suppose, it's the wisdom in crowds, the wisdom of more people thinking about the same sort of thing. And we've got some interesting tools to help us develop that approach to working through materials. There's tools that we've been developing. Cohere is an interesting tool. You get it from the OnLab site. I'm not going to show these things now, where you can put together ideas and sort of reason through the arguments for and against. So try and get that evidence out there and shared. CloudWorks, that I've mentioned several times already, is another place we're starting to do this to encourage people to work together. So we're collecting together the evidence that people are building independently around the world. As I said, we've got a lot of these projects that UNIT have funded over time, and to try and get the reflections shared, the interest in the same direction as whole next function. Our mechanisms are, well, we're networking with people, we've got a site to support it. We're carrying out some specific research projects, and I'll say a little bit more about the areas we are putting those on in the first instance. And particularly relevant maybe to some people here, if we're offering a sort of fellowship approach where we can support people to either spend time with us or the Carnegie Mellon University or somewhere else to come and sort of get embedded in the issues that are to do with researching in this open world and looking at open education resources and go back with some resources to then carry out a particular study in their own context. So one of these projects is about design, about learning design, and there's an area within the Cloud website where you can see some workshops we've run. In fact, my colleague Chronic Noel has created a much larger carbon footprint than I have by going to Simon Fraser University today, I think, or maybe tomorrow, where she's taking part in a workshop. But you don't all have to travel there. You can see how the workshop's going. You can see the activities taking place through the CloudWorks site. I gave Lynn the link earlier. I might have given her too many links, but I think that's the right one to take you to the Simon Fraser workshop. We've also had a visiting professor from Spain spend 4 months with us and sort of look at these, what we call designs, which is describing better what open education resources do to help people understand it, and taking a different slant, which is patterns, which is really describing better how people can learn with whatever resources. And it's quite interesting how in our workshops it's been much easier to communicate the second than it would be to invest in the first, where we try and hone the design descriptions. Just to communicate perhaps what patterns is about. What patterns is about, well, what's an Olympic stadium? You describe it at a high enough level of terms, then you can end up with different solutions, the top being Sydney, the middle being Beijing, and the one at the bottom being the London one. Coming along nicely now. Last time I used these slides, all I have was a building site to show for London, but it's developing. So I'm going to try the poll, have another little pause for interaction. I know I've done a very quick description of patterns, but if you think about them as this sort of overall approach to how you learn, how many learning patterns do you think you've experienced that you'd need to be able to communicate to people before they could get hold of a set of resources, open education resources, or even anything that's out there openly in the world, and put them together in a new way to sort of fit that pattern? I realize, say, I've done the shortest talk before on this particular aspect before answering the question, but you've got vote buttons just, in my case, it's just on the word Illuminate Live in the heading A, B, C, D. So if you'd care to vote now and say whether you think there's a few patterns, say 1 to 4, a few more, past 10, see which zone you think the number of patterns. Have a go. Please press the button whether it makes whether the question makes entire sense to you or not.
I can publish the results in a moment on your screen, Patrick, okay?
Thanks, Lynn. That'll be great. Thank you. Okay, that's some real data for me. I like data. So you see that there's a fair few people think there's probably a lot of these. But you've got sort of relatively low numbers dominating. So 1 to 4, 5 to 10. And I've asked this question, this will be the third time, so I'll ask this question in a forum which has fairly expert people involved. And actually, the answer most people give is, we could, if we get the right sort of descriptions, there's not very many that are needed to help people then take advantage of the resources that are out there by giving some additional guidance. So there's a level of sort of guidance that needs to be developed to help people work with open education resource sites that tends to be missing from the sites themselves. And working with Yanis has sort of encouraged me down this direction to see that we should put more effort into sharing of these patterns. And I think you can certainly answer at the high end as well. Because this is a bit of the how long is a piece of string sort of question. You could say there's lots of patterns that need to be developed. But I think to me, it's clear that there's value in developing a few and trying to get them communicated well. And that's what we're going to move on to. This shows some of the work that we've brought in from Yanis. By having Yanis with us, he's been able to bring in work that he's already done on collaborative patterns. This particular jigsaw pattern is a classic, but it's sort of well described, well established. So we've sort of got this approach of sort of listening to other people and also testing out ideas by running face-to-face workshops, and we're moving on to sort of represent those as virtual workshops in the cloud workspace. We're also getting data in. Yota, who's in the audience, is a colleague of mine, and she's been talking to all of these organizations, asking people who are in the open world, and not necessarily in the open education resource world, there's a sort of informal open education resource world as well as a more formal one, what are the issues that they're finding and the attitudes that come out. I just noticed Terry's mentioned Christopher Alexander, and yeah, this is very much work that's inspired by Christopher Alexander's looking at the architecture world. And the key sort of message from that is that he hasn't described everything that's possible, but he describes a few good things that you can achieve in his book. Another one of the sub-projects is looking at participatory learning, sort of how are people now learning in this open world. Sort of, I suppose there's still a producer element, a teacher element. We're now looking at sort of what's happening more directly with communication with learners, because most of our 8 million visitors to OpenLearn are learners rather than teachers. And we've got some research going on around that, working with particular other sites, looking at the models there using CC Mixter, Smart History, and we've got a project here called iSpot, which is gathering real data of nature observations. A fascinating site, I must say, iSpot. That sort of is then people can do authentic work that feeds into their learning. It had a bit of a coup just last week when a new moth was discovered by a six-year-old girl, and she posted the picture onto iSpot, and an expert then came in and confirmed that this was a new moth to the UK, a rare visitor from elsewhere in Europe. Around the research we've been doing there, so another colleague, Elle Peder, who's working on the project, she's done a very broad study of thousands of sites that are aiming to do social networking, then sort of pinned it down by following particular patterns and tracks of people working on those sites. And people can undervalue content. Content isn't attractive. People are gathering to sites because they've got content that interests them. And in particular, the characteristic she's identified, sort of content that helps people come to a site, it's got a high quality appeal to it, it's fresh, it's fast, it's micro, and it's relevant to people. This has been brought home to us on OpenLearn because we can see what brings people into our site, and as well as sort of broad reasons people come to OpenLearn to look for free courses, which is one of our highest searches. very high up in the search for very specific things like eutrophication, which I didn't know what it was, but it's to do with algae in water. And it's not that everybody in the world is searching for eutrophication. It's more that if you search for eutrophication, there's not very many options to find a good site that explains it. So having a specialist site that's out there and open brings people together. But alongside that then is the social support. And it's getting these two right to bring people through a sort of process of participation. You see various modes of participation going on between users, whether they sort of browse or whether they take part. And it's been stated often that sort of this very small percentage of people who are actual editors, Terry used this example yesterday of people who read Wikipedia versus those who edit Wikipedia. But actually, on most social sites, there's more of a switching between modes in which people take part rather than people being of a particular level. And perhaps it's too simple to see this as a people thing, more as a behavior thing. We're certainly working with other areas of the world as well and looking at cultural transfer. The talk I gave earlier today to the JISC project was to do with whether open education resources is cultural colonization. And again, there's a CloudWorks site you can go to see a different talk, although with a little bit of overlap between slides. And we've been looking at this issue of whether content travels and the message that we're giving out through talking about open educational resources. Because actually, if you study what we're saying as organizations involved in this, there's a strange sort of tension between trying to help the world and trying to help our organization. A lot of people have latched on to a result from our own work, which shows that we have actually attracted thousands of students to the Open University through the Open Learn Open Education Resource site. And so obviously we want that to happen, but I think you've got to be careful not to set out to see this as a recruitment model. It is about being more open to what can happen than that. Otherwise, restrictions start to creep back in. We found that the openness brings collaborations, and we've been able to use tools that are also freely available. So Open Education Resources includes tools. We've got a free flash meeting system to have free video conferencing, and we use that for our own projects. We've got work going on which has led not, I realize I talk a bit too much about the Open University, but our partner, Carnegie Mellon University, is working actually with people in Toronto University on the Knowledge Forum system, Marlene Scardimelia, and the work she's done about how students can operate to understand things inside forums. How can we apply that to a very open system and understand what's going on there? Okay, so that's sort of a very quick run through work that's going on. We've got about 10 people working on the project here in the OU, and then there's the team at Carnegie Mellon University as well. I suppose just to sort of wind down, just do visit us at allnet.org. We've got a site there that we're working on at the moment. We've got the CloudWorks site. Sorry, I clicked on the wrong button just for a second, as well. But there's a slightly later picture that I took where you can see the discussion taking part on top of the various topics we've got going. Please do explore CloudWorks. Please do explore allnet.org. Do think about whether you've got stories that you would like to share through us, whether you've got you'd like to work with us as researchers, whether you'd like to work with us as fellows. The model we've got in AllNet is evolving as, again, sort of we're not being a one-stop shop. We're trying to make use of all the Web 2 tools. So we're doing a bit of research 2.0, as we're studying the world of open educational resources as they're emerging. So that brings me to the end of my slides. So I'd like to hand over again to Mike. I noticed there were a few questions going past in the, or a few comments going past in the chat as well. But please do ask a question to me. I think we've got another 15 minutes or so. Over to you.
Tony, you can go ahead and grab the mic.
Hi, Patrick. It's Tony here. We really enjoy your presentation. So I have a question for you. In your presentation, you mentioned about like cultural, like, you know, disclosure. So from where I come from, I was brought up in a Chinese family, like, you know, traditionally the Chinese parent expect the kid to be really excel. The teacher always expect the kid work so hard, like, in the all focus is on, like, you know, the outcome. Not a whole lot, like, you know, is on, like, you know, learning the process. So how we as an educator, like, you know, can address the issue, like, you know, can we teach both process and outcome, like, you know, at the same time?
Well, I think what we did was try and make it very clear the outcomes that could be expected from our carefully crafted learning experiences. And then we observe people coming in from all sorts of directions and missing out the bit where we explain how carefully we've prepared those outcomes. So we've got an open process going on, which is perhaps more flexible than would be implied by saying, can we sort of actually teach process and outcome? We've got to appreciate the process that people are going through in the open world and the different ways in which we can steer. And there's a sort of disaggregation, I suppose, going on that we can offer. And I believe Athabasca has led with this, sort of offering some accreditation to people who might have found already the resources out there in the world. So I'm not quite sure whether I'm really answering your question, but more pointing out that the Open Education Resources is giving people a different option, and there's more variation, perhaps, in how people are using the material to learn or to teach than the original designers might have expected. Do come back and let me know whether I've touched on the right sort of zone or not. Thanks, Tony. So you do feel that that's... and thanks also for the details of the prior learning assessment program. I wasn't sure whether I was saying something that was a hoped-for implementation or a system that's actually in place. Any more questions?
Yeah, Patrick, I really appreciated the listing and got a bit depressed looking at all of the traps that you mentioned earlier. I wonder if you can, if you've prioritized the OLNet program to try to focus on any one of those, or which you see are most amenable to removing that trap through the research that either you're conducting or what you think is most amenable to a reduction by anyone's research.
Yes, I suppose we're trying to map the area. So we're not trying to ignore particular aspects, but we have picked out some priorities. One of them is to look at this, I suppose it's the one I call the Holy Grail trap, really, that people keep trying to look for reuse and take up. And so in terms of looking at how you can match what happens by releasing your content to helping people understand the ways in which it can be used, the design work and the patterns work. So I think that has shown some fruit. It does match with other research that's gone on into pedagogic patterns. But trying to apply it in a practical way. A lot of the pedagogic pattern work has been around extracting patterns, cataloging patterns, and I suppose there's always the pragmatics in what we're doing in the open educational work. So that's one thing. Then again, the already mentioned the participatory learning, which is trying to take the user's point of view in this. What do users get out? How can people come across and take part as learners? And the going beyond the producer view of we've made it available. So I suppose this is the build it, we will come trap that actually, yes, we did build it, yes, they came, but perhaps there's a much better opportunity if we see the participation, the taking part, the building things, the augmenting the content, carrying out authentic assessment processes by doing things that are possible and mashing from sites that have been built in one way with sites that offer different affordances and different ways to use it. I just sort of give a quick mention for work Carnegie Mellon Institute doing with the University of Pittsburgh as well, which is trying to see how content can, in their terminologies, travel, in other words, move between contexts, and that ties up with in the there's global issues, but in the US there's the issue of the community college initiative that Obama's task force has got behind, and I think that's a very interesting area, a very challenging area of trying to spread resources, make sure they work in new contexts, and so I think there's very interesting work going on there to meet a real need that's been identified in the US.
Please feel free to click on the microphone if you have a question, or you can type it into the text box.
I thought it's Terry's point about the fellowship program. We've been running the fellowship program through sort of contacts that we made in developing the proposal up to now. And we're wanting to open it up in November with an open announcement to set out how people can apply. The general model, and so far every person who we've actually involved in it, we've broken the model, but the general model would be that people would come and spend a fairly short time, 2 weeks, maybe a month, supported financially by us to come and spend some time probably here, possibly at another site where you're working with people who are involved in the open education resource area, but then return and sort of have a long tail of activity back in your own context. So go back and sort of run a dissemination workshop in your own organization would be a typical thing to do. We also see, and we've got it specifically described, we've got two levels of fellowships. So we've got expert fellowships, where actually our mission, as we did with Yanis, is taking someone who's doing really good research and get them to pay attention to what this research means in the open educational resource world. So Yanis I've never really looked at the issues that were coming up around open education resources, and that was a very fruitful thing to do. We also have more developmental fellowships, which we see working in particular with to spread out our impact into different countries. So working with people in Brazil, working with people in Turkey, I've discussed with people in Bangladesh. And I've got a research student who's currently spending some time in Africa, where she's doing some work to do with her thesis, but also doing additional work to feed into understanding the infrastructure in Africa. So I see there's two sorts of fellowships going on. So from people in this audience, it could well be a sort of crossover between these. You've got some expertise, you've got some ideas perhaps around the Web 2 world, perhaps around particular sorts of technology that can help people learn, but if only you had some space to apply it to the challenges of open education resources, you could make a difference. I hope that helps clarify what we're trying to achieve there, and we'll make it clearer. There's a little bit about fellowships at the moment, but we'll make it clear when we really open up the application process in a month or so's time.
Okay, well, I'm going to take advantage of this pause, and I'd like to thank you, Patrick, for sharing your time with us here today during Open Access Week at Athabasca. And we really appreciate you raising our awareness of BullNet and also bringing to our attention some of the traps and some of the opportunities that are available with open research and open access. So thank you for that. And I would like to, I'm going to grab that slide. I'll go back to that, Patrick. I'd like to remind everybody of the sessions coming up during the remainder of the week. And Tony, if you could email me the names of our draw winners, that would be great. I'll announce that. Tomorrow we have our own president of Athabasca University, Dr. Fritz Panacoke, and he'll be discussing open access publication, specifically AU Press, I believe. And on Thursday, we will have Steve Schaefer, our own Tony Tin, and Colin Elliott discussing open access archives and repositories. And on Friday, Dr. Rory McGrill will be discussing open educational resources. So hopefully you can make it for those. If you have to miss any of these sessions, as I mentioned, they are recorded and archived at the link that I have there on the screen, and I'll put it up in the text box again in a moment, too. And you can also, I believe, get an MP3 recording to listen to, and the PowerPoint slides will be available there for you. Now, Tony tells me our prize winners today are Rick, Kenny, and Rachel. You have won a fabulous new open access t-shirt. And if you text Tony, I believe he will get your address from you and get that to you, okay? Oh, he's put up his email address. Great. Thank you, Tony, for doing that. And thank you, everybody, for joining us here. And I hope to see you again tomorrow.